My name is Michael Archambron, as mentioned, and I'm here the attorney representing Mr. Mario Avila. Briefly into the facts, Mr. Avila was arrested in March 2012 for assault and making threats, communicating threats. Pursuant to an investigation regarding his background, it was determined that he had been deported previously. That deportation was pursuant to being convicted in California. That one of the prior convictions in California involved what is in violation of California Penal Code 459 and 460. California described that as a burglary, and the violation would occur when someone would actually go into a building inhabited or a business, and I'm summarizing, with the intent in order to commit a grand theft or petty theft or any felony, and that would make them guilty of burglary. If it was a dwelling, then in this case, Mr. Avila's case it was, it would be a violation of 460 as well. They just simply turned the 459 into a first-degree offense because the building that was entered was a dwelling. Initially, whenever he was being sentenced, he was looking at a 16-level increase.
He was looking at what?
A 16-level increase under the guidelines, 2L1.2, of reentering illegally pursuant to committing an aggravated felony of burglary. I objected to that, unbeknownst to me at the same, based upon the fact it wasn't a burglary, statute 459 did not meet the definition of a generic burglary.
What was he convicted of, 459 or 460?
460.
460.
Well, if I may, apparently it's 459, but ultimately 460 because it was a dwelling. In other words, 459 says in California.
How do we know that? Is there an indictment in the record or something?
It was in a pre-sentence investigation report.
The PSR says that.
Yes, sir.
All right. That he was a burglary of a dwelling.
Ultimately, yes, sir.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And that's fine. There was some confusion at first. They considered it was an armed robbery because the conviction was so long ago. That was correct. And we've had, I think, up to 6 PSRs in this case because of all the different amendments. And we discovered before sentencing.
Now, everybody agrees this is we're applying a categorical approach here.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no issue about the modified categorical approach.
No, Your Honor. And that's
so
we're getting at.
We're looking at the California burglary statute and deciding whether it's an aggravated felony, correct?
Exactly. That was my objection under when it first came out, a 16-level increase. You could not apply a modified categorical approach. You had to look at the elements. And our position was the missing element. With a burglary, generic burglary, you have to have and basically breaking or entering into a building with the intent to commit an offense therein.
So here, to get the enhancement that he got, it had to be a crime of violence, which has to, one option there is that there has to be a substantial risk that physical force was used.
For an 8-level increase.
Right. And I thought that the California courts had specifically used that language in defining burglary in California.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
I said I thought the California courts had specifically used that language, or language almost identical to what appears in the sentencing guidelines, to describe burglary.
Well, if I understand the question correctly, the California burglary does have a missing element of the breaking or the unlawful entry.
Well, that would fit under a generic version of
of
burglary.
But right.
Now we're going under the alternate version in the guidelines.
Well, according to Camps, and that's where I hinge everything, because it just came out and that changed everything in our sentencing. And as Your Honor, you just pointed out, yes, sir. The question then comes up: well, what about this residual clause?
This residual clause is a different residual clause, correct?
As opposed to what was found in, what was the case in Mr.
One used in Day Camp and the one in front of us. Different residuals, different statute or different guideline, isn't it?
Our position would be it's not. It's more
so. That was the 16-level enhancement.
Yes, sir. For armed career criminal. That's correct.
In the camps. Right.
Under 924E. Yes, sir.
Right. So here we're here for 8, and there's a lower or a different standard for that.
Right, under 18 U.S.C. Subsection 16.
But this is an armed career criminal.
No, sir.
Isn't this reentry?
Yes, sir.
Has to be an aggravated felony.
Yes, sir.
Which is defined as a crime of violence under the guideline.
Right, under 18. Well,
and that crime of violence definition ends up with the residual clause.
Yes, sir.
It's a different residual clause, isn't it? Isn't it the residual clause under the reentry guidelines, not under armed career criminal guidelines?
Right.
And hadn't the Fourth Circuit said the law as to armed career doesn't apply to this?
Well, the DeCamps, DeCamps.
DeCamp wasn't this provision, was it?
No. Our position would be it's the same. It's not the same statute, not the same. One's 924E.
Do you think DeCamps controls this?
Yes, sir.
But they specifically said in a footnote, the Supreme Court, or Justice Kagan, said, we aren't addressing this offense today.
Right.
DeCamps.
It has not been addressed. And that's when I did the brief, obviously, I couldn't find anything, and there's nothing been, to my knowledge, subsequent to that. But drawing the analogy is what I can say is that
the residual clause, as I understand it, for a crime of violence, for this enhancement, is an offense that by its nature involves a substantial risk that physical force against person or property may be used while you're committing the offense. And there are California Supreme Court decisions that say burglary involves, quote, danger that the intruder will harm the occupants in attempting to perpetrate the intended crime or to escape, as well as danger that the occupants will, in anger or panic, react to the invasion, inviting more violence. Doesn't that definition from the California Supreme Court fit hand in glove under the definition and the guidelines?
For federal application, is contrary to DeCamps. California and...
But I thought you just told us that this definition that we're using for this case, for this lower sentencing enhancement, is not the one that was involved in DeCamps.
It's not a burglary, first of all. California looks at it as a burglary. The problem is it's not a burglary because it's got a missing element. The missing element isn't whoever breaks into a building is guilty of a burglary.
Right, but we're not looking at it as a generic.
I know, but you have to look at whether it's a burglary or not. Our position is California Section 459 is not a burglary. It's kind of the flip side of the Taylor case where the Supreme Court said, we don't care what you call the statute. If the elements contained in generic burglary fit, it's a burglary, whether you call it a break and entering or you call it a burglary. The camps is the flip side of that. They're saying, our position is, we don't care if you call it a burglary. If it doesn't meet, doesn't have the elements of generic burglary, it's not a burglary.
But that's in Day Camp. I just can't put my hands on the case. Doesn't that deal with what a burglary is?
Exactly.
Does it deal with the residual clause?
Well, the problem
didn't
is...
Didn't that deal with the top question, not the bottom question?
Both, because the missing element is not the lack of intent or the lack of being in a building. The missing element is forceful entry.
The camp's burglary was a common law burglary, which was a breaking and entering. Isn't that right?
Well, it's...
It was burglary...
It's statutorily, it's statutorily defined.
But it's a breaking. It was a breaking and entering.
It does not require that.
Burglary. But this one doesn't. That's what you're getting at.
Yes, sir.
This is an entry without breaking, you're saying.
Right. The 459 does not require a break.
But I think, are you sure you're right on Day Camp? You said Day Camp applies to the residual clause as well?
No, sir.
It does.
I mean, there's a residual clause in 924E.
Did the Supreme Court say that their reasoning in Day Camp applied to the residual clause? Did they consider the residual clause in Day Camp?
They did. I would say they did because they referred to the crime as being almost like a shoplifting.
Why don't you say the footnote number 6 in that decision in Day Camp, which says the government has forfeited an alternative argument that 459 qualifies as a predicate offense under ACCA's residual clause. The Supreme Court said that's not even being argued in this case.
I think I can't speak for the government. I can probably...
Well, I can speak for, the Supreme Court.
Right. I mean, she just said they didn't argue it. Why didn't they? And our position would be if they had argued it.
No. They forfeited that. In other words, the court's not going to consider that. What? The court in Day Camp, I don't see how Day Camp applies, because Day Camp is to the top of what is a burglary. It does not involve the residual clause. Supreme Court says that absolutely clearly. And then, isn't there Fourth Circuit law that says even if we were to look at Day Camp, we don't consider it because we don't consider under the reentry guidelines here in the Fourth Circuit, we don't consider the ACCA and career criminal.
Well, if you don't have...
Doesn't the Fourth Circuit say that? Do you know...
I'm not familiar with that, Your Honor.
Excuse me?
I'm not familiar with that. I understand there may not...
This is Aparicio Sora case.
Okay.
And it says... I'm just going to read it to you. And it says... the argument also fails the government's argument for a simple reason. Wardrick and Jenkins involve different clauses of different sentencing provisions. Both cases involve the residual clause, which categorized prior state offenses as federal sentencing predicates if they criminalize, quote, conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another. This language appears in the Armed Career Criminal Act and the Career Offender Guidelines. But it is not in the reentry guideline. That is why Wardrick and Jenkins are irrelevant to this case.
I understand that, Your Honor, if the court, and if that's the way it stands, still without the forced entry, you don't have a crime of violence. And even under the 18 U.S.C., which I think 16, our position.
It's clear that what he was convicted of didn't require a forced entry.
Right. So there, yes, sir. So
how do we know that?
Pardon me?
How do we know that?
Because 459 just says, just he who enters into the building is guilty, and Judge Kagan...
I thought he was convicted of 460.
Well, that's just a dwelling. It didn't add the element. To be a first-degree burglary under 460, it didn't add the additional element of breaking and entering. It just simply said it's a dwelling, then it becomes a higher degree. That does nothing to save the California...
459 just says entering.
Right, yes, sir. And 460 doesn't add the breaking into it as either.
But then... What did the indictment say? California indictment. Do we know?
Oh, it was just simple possession of a firearm by a felon.
Are we allowed to look at that under the categorical approach?
Just a categorical approach, yes, sir.
Are we allowed to look at the California indictment?
Yes, sir.
Under the categorical approach?
Yes, sir.
But don't we look at what California says about its own law to decide whether or not this fits in the reentry guideline? As the crime of violence under 16, any other offense that is a felony and that by its nature involves a substantial risk that physical force against the person or property of another may be used.
No, sir, because they're looking at it from a different standpoint.
If he's convicted of a felony in California, wouldn't you look at the California law?
Yes, sir.
Why won't we look at And isn't that California law, isn't the final definition of that given to it by the Supreme Court in California?
No, sir. I think the final definition is by the U.S. Supreme Court, and DeCamps has said it is not a crime of violence. Categorically, it's not a burglary.
Yeah, but
California's calling it a burglary, and it's not.
But, I mean, the Supreme Court said repeatedly that in terms of what a state law means, under that state's law, that's determined by the highest court of that state.
They can call it a burglary, but when it comes to applying...
They call it a burglary, but they also said that entry into an inhabited structure is the most dangerous and most likely to cause personal injury, justifying assignment of the higher degree of burglary law, California case.
Which they can do. I mean, they can call it anything and have higher degree, but
it's dangerous.
But it can't be applied in the federal matter.
Do you think it has to be... Do you think that this rides on the definition of burglary?
As the Supreme Court in DeCamps, applying it as far as an aggravated felony, yes, sir.
I know, but DeCamp didn't look at the residual clause in a statute that's similar but doesn't control.
And this case wouldn't rise or fall on that. Our position still would be the residual clause would not apply no matter in this case because you don't have the requirement of a forced entry. It cannot be considered in any shape or form as a burglary.
California
in this
law
case.
Seems to say that whether there's a forced entry or not doesn't dispose of it.
Under the residual clause.
If you commit a burglary without the forced entry, that's still dangerous.
Well, they can say that, but I don't think.
It qualifies under 16B.
Right, but it's not a burglary.
The language of their cases seems to fit under 16B. Substantial risk of whatever the language is.
The only problem with them, Your Honor, is that they failed to, in the statute to say that it requires a forced entry.
And your red light's on there.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Oh, if I may, I can entertain more questions. Our position summary is that the element missing is the forced entry. And therefore, however you shape it, there is no, it's not a crime of violence. And therefore,
Are you using your rebuttal time?
Oh, I don't know. Am I?
I'll let you.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You go ahead.
I would also make mention that, I apologize, and I lost track of my time then, that the reason why this is important in Mr. Avila's case also is because the second issue was under 3553 arguments that the court committed procedural error and substantive error because whenever we made our arguments under 3553A, as mentioned in our statement of facts about Mr. Avila under his characteristics and his rehabilitative approach, that he took rehabilitative efforts, took classes in jail, and the court did not address those. When he sentenced him to 37 months, he simply said regarding that he didn't think he was being deterred, his history, focused on his criminal history. If the 8 level does not apply in this case, that would make the district court sentence considerably higher, a considerable variance beyond the guidelines.
You explained that in your brief.
Right, yes, sir, Your Honor. And therefore, it would not withstand.
Let's see what Mr. Miller got.
Thank you. I apologize, Your Honor.
Mr. Miller? What's the government's position on this DeCamps point?
Your Honor, William Miller on behalf of the United States. The government's position on DeCamp is that it has no application in this case.
That's the reason you didn't brief it?
That footnote 6 that the court identified earlier, it makes it explicitly clear that.
But you didn't even mention it in your brief, did you?
I didn't mention
it. They mentioned it in their brief, and you didn't even come back on it. And that's what we spend our time here on.
And perhaps I should
have. But it's a Supreme Court case on the almost the same statute in California involving burglary.
It's a case addressing.
I mean, I'm interested in how it can be distinguished.
It can be distinguished because it's a case addressing when you get to look at Shepard-approved documents for the purpose of determining whether or not the crime is generic burglary, which is the first part of the definition. The case has nothing to say about our question, which is whether or not it qualifies under the residual clause. We're not here arguing we concede that California burglary is not generic burglary. The proper inquiry under the residual clause, though, is whether in the ordinary case, and this comes straight from James, the proper inquiry is whether the conduct encompassed by the elements of the offense in the ordinary case presents a serious potential risk of injury to another.
And does this California conviction he has require a forced entry?
No, sir, and that's why it's not generic burglary.
Right.
But he
says that the defendant's attorney says since it doesn't require forced entry, that takes it out of being a crime of violence. Now, you don't agree with that?
No, sir. My response to that.
What makes it a crime of violence?
My response to that is that in the ordinary case, a violation of the residential burglary statute, because it does require the element of a dwelling, would present similar risks to generic burglary. And I would draw the court's attention to the James case.
Because they already go in the house, inhabited house, without breaking, but there's danger still there.
Yes, Your Honor. In James, which was about attempted burglary.
The California court said that, basically.
Yes, sir. That's right, Judge Agee. And that was the California Supreme Court. They told us what the risks associated with their usual burglary situation were. And, you know, Your Honor has summarized those a moment ago, but they are identical to the risks.
So we rely on what the California court said and say it's a crime of violence under 16B of Title 18, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which makes it a crime of violence under the guidelines?
It makes it a crime of violence for purposes of that 8-level enhancement.
And which makes it an aggravated felony?
Yes, Your Honor. And The illegal reentry guidelines are a little funny because they have two different crime of violence.
How many different definitions of crimes of violence are in the federal code?
Far too many.
How many? Far too many. I agree with that.
And there's
and
two.
How many of them are aggravated felonies? Or that term is thrown around a lot.
Right. There's two just in illegal entry. And as Mr. Archambraun summarized, the 16-level enhancement has a crime of violence definition where there's no residual
and
clause.
And the 16th-level enhancement is what the Supreme Court dealt with in the camp.
They were dealing with the Armed Career Criminal Act, but it functions the same way as the crime of violence definition here for the 16-level.
You'd think the camps would be worth a footnote or two.
And I apologize for not drawing the distinction earlier.
They're writing long opinions about the California burglary stuff.
It's just clearly based. Excuse me, Your Honor. It's clearly based on that footnote. Just not applicable here.
Did you think it was so obvious nobody would even fathom that it would be improved?
I certainly wish now that I had cited DeCamps, Your Honor.
Yeah, but
it is clearly doesn't guide our analysis in this case, which is to look at the ordinary case and determine what the risks are. And as the California Supreme Court has said, they are the same risks as generic burglary, and that's the conclusion that's been reached.
Is there any question here that the categorical approach applies? Everybody agrees with that, right? It's not the category. And under the categorical approach, we have to look at what the statute and the elements of the offense?
Yes, Your Honor. You look at the risks
and
presented.
And there's no disagreement as to what the statute says or what the elements of the offense are?
Not to my knowledge.
Is the indictment from California in here? Do we know what he was charged with? Are we allowed to look at that?
The indictment doesn't come into the analysis here. There's no dispute.
Is the indictment in the record? Let me ask you that part.
No, Your Honor.
So we don't know what the indictment says. So, but if it were here, would we be allowed to look at it under the categorical approach?
We would not be able to. That's what DeCamps tells us.
We just look at the fact he was convicted of
first degree California burglary.
Look at the statute. Look at the elements. How does it measure up with 16B?
Exactly.
That's it, isn't it?
Isn't the elements as the state has defined those elements?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the language they use is the judicial gloss of the court,
right?
Of the California Supreme
Court. Because isn't it true that the state, just for what it's worth as an aside, the state Supreme Court, other than some due process argument or something, they can decide those elements mean whatever they say they mean. In most states, isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And this court would.
But it's elements with that judicial gloss. In other words, and your argument is, it is no question under California law as defined by California that this falls within 16B or
correct.
Whatever number it is.
The Supreme Court of California has done our work for us, which is to define the risk.
Maybe they cited DeCamp.
Which is to define the risk of a usual burglary situation.
Have they had a California state court or Supreme Court had a case since DeCamp, if you know?
I don't know that they have. I don't know that that would apply to their analysis.
Or any federal courts had this California burglary statute since DeCamp.
And I've looked for that, and I haven't found any. I will say that the four circuits that looked at this issue prior to DeCamp all came out the same way, which is to say that first-degree California burglary qualifies under the residual clause, be it under the Armed Career Criminal Act or here under 16B. And if there are no additional questions other than on my failure to cite DeCamp, with respect to the first issue, I'll just briefly touch on the second issue, Your Honor. And the standard there is whether or not this court can conduct a meaningful review as to the reasons for the sentence imposed. And here, the district court, although it was a brief summary, it did show the basis for the court's decision to sentence at the high end of the guidelines. And that was based on the history and characteristics of the defendant in this case, which, as the district court summarized, is a pattern of illegally entering the country and committing violent crimes, starting with assault with a weapon.
Were you the trial counsel in this case?
I handled the sentencing, Your Honor.
Then I'm just wondering why you wouldn't suggest to the court, ask them to make a little more explicit, a little more detail. You may be right. This may be sufficient. But if it had been more articulated, more precise, wouldn't that resolve this and almost make it a non-appealable, an issue not worthy of an appeal? I'm asking you.
And perhaps I should have, Your Honor. I do think in this case there is enough where the court's not left to speculate.
I didn't ask you that. I said, wouldn't it have been better?
Absolutely.
And why wouldn't a lawyer stand up, a lawyer who's at risk for it not being enough, and just say, Your Honor, we appreciate what you've done, but we'd ask that you pronounce under the factors. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, and perhaps that would be the better practice, Your Honor.
It might help the parties, judicial system, the family members who are sitting out there and watching their family member being sentenced. I'm not saying the court here didn't meet the standard of the law, but it seems to me, Judge King, I've heard him say a couple times this week about it's important, the appearance is important too, maybe not to a legal determination. In other words, we don't decide on appearance whether the law was followed or not. But my gosh, doesn't that just help everybody know what's going on and help the family members know? To them, it's just not, what's that person in that black robe sending, you know, our brother to jail for 30 years? At least they may disagree, but at least the judge can just tick off those things. Yeah, and by the way, let me say, and I'm just wondering why the defense lawyer, that's not the defense lawyer's job to do that. The defense lawyer does not have the job to say, Your Honor, how about make it a little more clear so your verdict, your decision will stand up on appeal. Seems to me, in the best interest of the public, it might be consideration for the government to take into account. Do you agree with me?
Good point well taken, Judge Shedd. I will just conclude by saying that in this case, there is sufficient discussion so that the court can conduct that meaningful appellate review. But
the prosecutors aren't fearful of the judges or anything. They don't seem to be when they come up here. I don't know why they shouldn't be down there
either. Let's separate that out. Are y'all fearful of district court judges? I know. Are you fearful of appellate court judges?
They don't seem to be afraid of us.
Judge Vorey is a nice man. I think he'd be appreciated.
And typically he does go through all the particular arguments. But in this case, Your Honor, I think this is sufficient for appellate review. It satisfied the Carter standards.
Just let me say one other thing to you. I mentioned earlier, when I was a district court judge, if ever someone stood up and suggested, Your Honor, we think it might be more appropriate if he did X, Y, and Z, I appreciated them not letting me make potentially an error. And I thought it was good for the system to not make an error at that time, rather than have the Court of Appeals have to tell me to do it later. I just say for what it's worth.
Thank you, Judge Shedd. And unless the court has any other questions, I'd ask that they affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Achenbrod? Archenbrod, I'm sorry.
I don't know if I've used up all my rebuttal time.
You haven't used any rebuttal time. You go right ahead.
Well, very good. I don't have much more to add. Again, I think the justices here have all figured out our position, and I think it couldn't be more opposite. I would say, as far as the California Supreme Court addressing the inherent dangers, again, before them was not whether a person has committed an aggravated felony or not. Their standard was different. It wasn't the same issue before them. I understand they were trying to defend why they have first-degree burglary and creates more of a punishment for someone who goes into a home. But, again, our position is it doesn't really solve the problem. With regard to James, the Supreme Court case, they were, again, reviewing a generic burglary where they're saying, understandably, when the law says they have to break in and the person's trying to break in, that does create more of a chance for a conflict or the face-to-face encounter. As California was pointing out, when they refer to
you can't get around these California cases, though, that say that this, even though it's an entry without breaking, it's still dangerous.
I would disagree. I think again, when DeCamps was reviewing Judge Kagan, she was saying it's like shoplifting. The burglary is almost like a home shoplifting case, if you would. I understand they were making the law in order to try to punish people more who went into a home to steal, and I understand that.
Stealing out of a store is not covered by this statute.
Pardon me?
Stealing out of a store, if you shoplift down at the mall, that's not covered by this burglary statute.
Justice Kagan, the Supreme Court said
well,
it would be.
Well, that's a different statute.
It would be covered under California. Well, I understand. Yes, sir. 460, it would not be, but the
dwelling
bottom.
Dwelling, it talks about.
Pardon me?
This talks about a dwelling, you said.
Right. Exactly.
Everybody
yes,
says
sir.
It's a dwelling. I haven't seen the indictment, but you all seem to agree on that. It's a dwelling.
That's correct, Your Honor. It is. Well, I don't know if it's a dwelling. It's a dwelling because that's what he's convicted of. That's correct. I don't know what kind it was. We didn't. And again, you don't use a modified approach anyway. You just have to stick to
but
what.
But went down to the Walmart and shoplifted in Los Angeles. That doesn't seem to fit here.
Well, the burglary part would. It just wouldn't be the first-degree burglary. It would be second-degree.
Burglary of a dwelling in California.
Not first-degree burglary, but it would still be a burglary.
Wouldn't be first-degree burglary, which is what this was, you all say.
Right, but did not require a break and entering. And right. The James case, again, every time this, well, California kept calling it an intrusion, an invasion. Again, I think when our Supreme Court reviewed that, they're saying that's not required. So they're perhaps looking at it in a light, but understandably a different reason looking at it in that light. And that's our all adult.
Were you involved in this in the lower court?
Yes, sir.
And your court appointed up here.
Yes, Your Honor.
We appreciate your efforts on behalf of
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your client and the system.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome, sir.
We'll adjourn court, sine die, and go down and recounsel.